Good morning. Today is Tuesday, March the 12th. Joining us this morning, John Wolfram, who is, well, I don't know if you might be a hero for me. I'm not sure.
Probably not.
Well, you know, sometimes it's what you do, not who you are, right?
Okay.
All right. We'll talk a little bit about him in a sec, and also Pastor John McDonald from the Eureka Pentecostal Church. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
Good morning.
This is going to be cool for me as we get into this thing, because it's in one of my areas. Well, most folks know I like local history and history, but this is the first timer for me. So before we get there, though, our why do we say that is devil's advocate. Why do we say a person who questions every statement in a discussion is playing the devil's advocate?
Well, you need
Pastor.
Two sides of the story.
Two sides, okay. John, you want to weigh in on this
I
one?
I think that's good.
All right. It's because when any name is proposed for canonization in the Roman Catholic Church, two advocates are appointed. One of those is called God's advocate, and the other, and says all he can in support of the proposal. The other, the devil's advocate, says all he can against it. Hmm. You didn't think I could whip in a little Catholic
like
on
it,
you, did
yeah.
you? So, John, why don't you share with everybody what your background is before I start jumping in a little bit?
All right. I was born in Fort Atkinson, Wisconsin. And after high school, I joined the Navy, went through the underwater demolition SEAL team training out there in Coronado. And I was in Vietnam my first tour, and it was December 1968. And it was Christmas Eve. I was listening to the Armed Forces radio on my little Sanyo radio. And the station was interrupted with the astronauts of Apollo 8 that were circling the Earth. And they were reading from the book of Genesis, chapter 1. But little did I know at that time that when I came back to the United States that I would be called on to be a part of Apollo 10 and 11 rescue teams. And so our team, the Underwater Demolition Team 11, was chosen for those two recoveries. And then later on, there were others, but I chose not to be a partaker in that.
So was that wasn't Borman that read it.
What was that?
Who read, who was the flight commander?
On Lovell? On a 10?
No, in 68.
Anders was one of them, Lovell, and
I think Jim Lovell was the one who did the reading.
Yeah.
Yeah, which was kind of
Apollo 8.
Way cool, yeah. So, okay, so you were involved in the NASA program. Whether you, yeah, but you didn't fly the spaceship.
But there was like 400,000 people.
You know what? Still impressive to this, to this local guy, okay?
Okay.
So what involvement did you have? I mean, as a Navy SEAL, there's, I think, a lot of folks could speculate where you were involved in this. What element of 10 and 11 were you involved with?
On Apollo 10, I was a backup. There were actually three complete rescue teams, helicopter crew, frogman crew. Each crew had a sea anchorman. He would jump out in the water by himself to attach that parachute-type sea anchor. Then there were two others that would join him with a 200-pound flotation bladder. And then there was the fourth man that would be in a biological isolation garment. We called it the big suit for short. And I was chosen on Apollo 11 to be on that primary team. And I was the sea anchor man, which meant that I would jump in the water by myself. The capsule's out in the ocean, and there's a current, and the capsule moves, and then the swells and the waves would toss that capsule around, and that parachute anchor would stabilize it enough so the other two guys with that flotation collar and the third guy would be able to put it around the capsule.
Now, my understanding is that early on there was concern that the capsule itself might invert, and go upside, basically be upside down, and the guys would be, it'd be more challenging to get them out.
It was, that's exactly what happened, but it was a good thing for me. The night before, NASA looked at the weather situation and where the USS Hornet was, there were thunderstorms. And so they changed the splashdown site that night 250 miles from where it was. And so the ship, the USS Hornet, which is now a museum out here at Alameda, was steaming all night long to get to that location. Early in the morning, the three helicopter crews full of these rescuers split up and went in different sectors. And when that capsule hit the ocean, Buzz Aldrin was supposed to pull the lever that would jettison those parachutes. However, the jolt knocked his hand off the lever, and the wind with the parachutes turned that capsule in stable two or upside down. And then they flipped these little switches to blow up these inflation balloons, bladders they call them, and that capsule slowly would invert. Well, being that we were 13 or 12 miles away, and there was another backup team right above the capsule, it looked like the recovery would go to them, because safety is more important than choosing who's going to be the primary or secondary. But we were chosen, if all went well, to be the team that would get in the water. And so it took a few minutes for that to upright, and our helicopter made it in time. And the rest is history.
Well, no, the rest is the next segment. KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:19. We will be back.
We know you love Easy Radio, singing out loud, really out loud, to your favorite songs. But what about when you're traveling out of the area? Easy Radio can be heard throughout the area on 910 AM and 104.1 FM in Curry and Del Norte counties. And if you're in Humboldt County, 980 AM. That's Easy Radio, 910 AM in Brookings, 104.1 FM in Del Norte and Curry County, and 980 AM in Humboldt County. Good radio is easy.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Times, 8:23. We are back talking shop. Well, Pastor John's along for the ride. Got a nod. Didn't get the cross, but I got the nod, so that's pretty good stuff. And John Wolfram, who was a Navy SEAL and involved with the, I guess, the first recovery, or the recovery of Apollo 11, the first
moon
first
landing.
Guys on the moon, the lunar landing. As the capsule righted and everything was kind of set up, I'm sure there must have been a lot of protocols that were run through over and over and over and over to be sure that everything was done properly, because I would imagine the worst thing possible would be for the capsule to open, sink, and the guys come back from the moon, but they don't make it on shore. What were some of the drills and the procedures and the practices that the recovery crews went through to ensure that everything, or try to ensure at least, that everything was as smooth as it could have been?
Well, it started in San Diego, out in the San Diego Bay. Houston set a boilerplate that looked just like the capsule, a mock-up, and the Hilo crews were based there as well. And so it gave them a chance to train their men, and it gave us a chance to hone in our skills. We probably done about, you know, two dozen of those rehearsals in San Diego Bay until we got it down pretty well perfect. We did have some briefing. They shared with us certain parts of that capsule that would be, you know, kind of dangerous, since it held up explosives that would jettison the chutes and all those things that are on there.
So basically, don't get in front of those.
Well, yeah,
kind of
not,
thing.
Not mess with them too much.
Okay.
They briefed us on everybody's job, so we kind of knew what everybody else's job was. The helicopter crews had what they call a billy pew net, which dropped down on a cable where one person could get inside. And so we had to pretend to be those astronauts while those helicopter crews learned how to take somebody out of a raft aside the capsule.
What was your impression of the capsule?
The original or the mock-up?
Both. Were they comparable enough so that it was, you got a sense of what you were getting involved with?
Pretty much. Same size. The collar fit around it just exactly the same. And so we were trying to work on time. They wanted to see how fast it could be done. And so we were always timing ourselves, the whole procedure, to see if we could get it done. And on that actual recovery, we did break all the times we had previously done in rehearsal. So
a little adrenaline kick going on?
Yeah. You know, when you do something over and over and over again, it just becomes like rote. You know, you kind of become like a robot. You know what you're going to do. So when I jumped out on that original shot, I've done that so many times, I wasn't even thinking about my job. I knew I could do that. I was more concerned about the sharks that were in the water.
Yeah, that's always part of the interesting little dynamic, huh? Yeah. And the shark repellent?
No.
Yeah, okay.
On those night operations, because they might have had to board and land in the middle of the night, the lights from the helicopters attracted the sharks. And then other things in the water would attract the sharks. And on one of our practices on that Billy Pugh net, it had some foam around it where the astronauts would climb in. And we noticed that as it hit the water one day, one of the sharks took a bite out of that styrofoam. So we knew that they were kind of pesty. So we kind of were concerned about that.
With the training that you had versus the actual, okay, there it is. There's the capsule.
Yeah.
It's like, this is the real deal. And I know there was a lot of concern about potential contaminants. That it was the first, nobody really knew what was going on. Yeah. Would it come back to Earth? The guys were sequestered afterwards. Was there any sequestering of you and the rescue crew, the dive crew, or was there a thought, well, whatever it is going to be so diluted in the ocean that we don't have to be too concerned about these guys?
No, there was back decontamination procedures from NASA that required all of the frogmen that were in the water to be on open scuba, which made our job harder. That tank was about 50 pounds. The sea anchor was another 7 pounds or so. And when you jump in from 10 feet, 12 feet, 15 feet, depending on the swell, that's a pretty heavy load on your back. And then you have to swim up to that capsule, and all you got is your legs and those fins to hold you up. But NASA was really concerned about that, so they had a biological isolation swimmer who put on a big suit, and his job was to wash down that capsule. Now, you know, the capsule came back at 25,000 miles per hour, so as it was burning through, it's over 5,200 degrees Fahrenheit. I'm sure most of those germs on the outside were taken care of, but on the inside,
it's a tough sterilization process to go through. Yeah,
but you had whatever contents they brought back from the moon. I think they're more concerned about that. So the big swimmer scrubbed down the capsule, all the equipment on the outside. The hatch door was open. The astronauts were given three of those biological isolation garments. They took off their spacesuits, put that on, and when they came out, they were also washed down, scrubbed down.
So there was recognition of potential
this
stuff.
This was in the water before they were quarantined on the ship.
Yeah, yeah. That's so when the hatch opened,
yes,
what went through your head at that point?
Well, you know, I was the first man in the water after I attached that sea anchor. I also was instructed to swim up and look in the hatch window to see if I could get a thumbs up that all the astronauts were okay. And that was exciting to look in there and see their smiley faces. And it's kind of humbling, you know. They had to look at me. The first human being.
Yeah.
I made sure I brushed my teeth.
Yeah.
That
morning. Yeah. So many ripe potential comments could be made, huh? Oh, my. KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:30.
Dad. Decade of Difference presents the High School Innovate Business Challenge.
I'm Genevieve Regley, encouraging you to go for it and submit an idea. I didn't know if my idea would be selected, but it was, and I learned a lot about my idea and myself. It was a great experience and helped kickstart my business while still attending Ferndale High School.
Learn more at decadeofdifference.org. Deadline to enter is February 15th. Upload your idea and compete for thousands of dollars. It's the Decade of Difference. Be a part of it.
Good morning, KINS. News and information time. It's 8:35. We're back to Talk Shop this morning with John Wolfram, Navy SEAL diver for the United States Navy, but also...
X.
Well, you're not like the Marine, where you're never an X?
Once a Marine, always a Marine.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
In my dreams.
Yeah. You hope springs eternal, right? John was the guy that was there when the Apollo 11 capsule was in the water. He was the guy. One of four, but he was the guy. Talk Shop presented by CDH Painting, Redeck, Humboldt Termite and Pest Control, along with Murphy's Markets. John, as the event then completed, and we've probably almost everybody has seen some parts of that, the guys are then quarantined and they're set aside and everybody's there on the ship. Then things kind of faded away. They did the victory tour, and then Collins continued, Aldrin continued, Armstrong retired. There seems to be a little bit of a resurgence now in interest in NASA and the space program. Full disclosure, I think that ought to be funded as much as the Defense Department is. I think that there's so many benefits, but set that aside just so you know that my bias is a perspective. What were these guys like? The interaction that you had with them, the thumbs up, okay, that's a pretty standard military thing. But when they came out, when you did have some opportunity to interact with them then or later on or before that event, what kind of guys were these three individuals?
Well, there's a certain amount of the segment of population that still don't believe they actually went on the moon.
Some of them think the Earth is flat, too. Let's put those guys to the side for a sec.
So, looking at the expressions of someone that's never had acting lessons, it's genuine. If this was fake, then the 9,000 men that were on the 9 ships out there, including President Nixon and all of his entourage, now, I could understand Reagan. He might have been able to act a little bit, but Nixon wasn't a real good actor. So...
Many have said that, too.
Looking at expressions and the demeanor of all these people, if it was phony, we all should get an Academy Award for our acting abilities. But you can't fake genuine looks of expression. And Armstrong and Collins and Buzz Aldrin, you could tell they were just thrilled. In fact, Nixon asked Armstrong about the recovery. He said that may be one of the hardest parts of the whole trip, and he agreed, because they're out of control. They're waiting on somebody else's skill to get them out of that capsule. So, they're not in charge and they depend on somebody else, so maybe they have that feeling. But they had grins on their faces. They were smiling. We couldn't really communicate because they had this biological isolation garment on.
It's kind of like the bees.
Yeah.
A bee mask. Yeah.
Yeah. And, National Geographic and the photo pool gave us 5 cameras. And I had one, and the other guy had 4. And we were taking pictures, and I showed in the church that I spoke in last night here in town one of the pictures, and most of the pictures that I took had my thumb in it, so they didn't turn out very well, but this one did, and you can see the smiles. We're right next to them. They're in the raft right beside us, and the picture that I took shows all three, and you can just see through the mask the joy of being alive and accomplished the goal.
Yeah. Even to be selected for the astronaut program must have been just a super thing. And then many may not know, but this was not supposed to be the team that went up and landed. They got lucky.
Well,
an awful lot of it, I think, is luck as well as the scientific preparation. Would there be anything that in hindsight, with the knowledge and technology available at that time, that you would have done different or would have suggested be done differently?
I would have taken more of that gold foil off the capsule.
You got some?
Yes.
Oh, well, we won't ask where you're saving it and storing it, okay?
Well, you know, if you go out to the Space Air Space Museum in Washington, D.C., that very capsule that we recovered sitting there right as you walk in that front door, and I noticed there's not any of that gold foil on her now. So everybody got theirs. We just got ours first.
Oh, too cool. KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:41. We will be back.
Hey, Humboldt County. The folks at Fly Humboldt want to say thank you for all your support. The Los Angeles flight is a great success. Did you hear? Starting May 29th, we'll have a second departure to Los Angeles. It makes it even easier to visit sunny SoCal. What's more, we'll have flights to Denver starting June 7th. You'll only be a few hours away from the Mile High City or wherever you want to go. This will make connecting to the world even easier. Get more information at flyhumboldt.org or email us at info@flyhumboldt.org.
Good morning, KINS. News and Information Time. It's 8:44. We're back Talking Shop this morning with John Wolfram. Pastor John's just kind of giving us his blessing and being quiet over on the side. John, once the recovery had occurred, you've got the capsule, as you alluded to. The capsule is in the museum right now. So it's obviously not at the bottom of the ocean.
Right.
What happened? The guys get lifted out. You're sitting there and going, okay, my turn. What happened after that point?
We had, I don't know, maybe 20 minutes or 30 minutes waiting for the ship to still come by. That ship's over 200, you know, yards long. It's a huge thing coming at you. But
Have been inspiring all by itself, huh, being down there and seeing this coming at you.
Like a thimble in a bathtub, you know. But we had some dead time there. We actually fooled around quite a bit. We played King on a Mountain and goofed around and took pictures of ourselves. But when no one was looking, when that helicopter just kind of disappeared behind a wave when we're in the water, we stripped off some of that gold foil as souvenirs, stuck it on our wetsuit. We knew that once that capsule got aboard, it would be guarded, and they had Marines all around it and it was fenced off. But NASA got their souvenirs later, but we knew that we would not have a chance, so we just got our souvenirs early.
Now, one of the things I've heard about the capsule itself is that it really is tiny. I mean, when you think of sometimes, you know, you see either the Saturn V or the launch pad and the power and the energy, and that little way up at the yeah, you know, we see the rocket ship and we see the containers. Yeah. We don't see the capsule necessarily, or for these guys, you know, the limb also. What was the physicalness of the capsule?
If you look inside, even at the Smithsonian, just three men stuffed in there, and with the equipment they had to have and the stuff they brought back, is amazing. It must have just felt like a sardine in there. But the Orion, what they're doing now, is a little bigger. This one, Apollo, had three men, and the Orion, I think, has five or six that can fit into that new one. And the recovery now is going to be different. Where frogmen jumped into water, they have this new ship that's got kind of the back door opens and ramp goes down. It's got some arms. They kind of hug the capsule and pull it in.
Now, kind of James Bondy?
Kind of, yeah.
Yeah.
So I think the frogmen are out of job.
What are your thoughts? Yeah, granted, you were a frogman, so you're not a space guy, but I'm sure you have sympathies. What are your thoughts about NASA now and the thought about colonization on the moon and using that as a stepping off spot for space exploration? I know that's something that Neil Armstrong thought would happen by the end of the century and was really disappointed that it hadn't occurred.
And Buzz Aldrin.
Yeah.
You know, I think if we don't do it, we're going to be way behind, because China now and Russia and other countries are exploring the fact they want to go back to the moon. And I think it's a necessity that we stay up with everybody else. And now we've got these independent contractors taking civilians up, and it's a brand new day.
Yeah. Good, bad, or indifferent on that one?
I don't think we have a choice.
No, I mean with the independence, the private,
well,
private business.
Well, if I was a billionaire, I think I'd want a free ride. But
oh, I would loved. I don't think they cut these things my size for a bunch of different reasons. But I'm thinking.
I mean, John Glenn was an older guy, and he got a ride in a space shuttle. So
yeah, but I think he kind of had a little bit more panache and a little bit more inertia and momentum, and name recognition than little old me. But I space colonization to me is just, it seems like it would be the most logical thing in the world, just because of the technology spinoffs that happen.
Yeah.
You know, I've done a little bit of reading about this, and they talk about the going down onto the planet or the moon's surface, and that it was, what, two or three sheets of tinfoil or aluminum foil that we have now in the grocery store, and that's the thickness of the wall. If they would have inadvertently gone punch, it could have caused all kinds of problems. You know, the way we have things now, I can't imagine what potential is out there just in getting prepared for this, let alone doing and then finding things out and really kicking off science again and technology again for everybody to benefit from.
Yeah. Well, you know, looking back 50 years with the computer system they had then compared to what we got now in our hand here with an iPhone, it's amazing how far we've come. But, you know, Armstrong almost... You know, the computer was directing them to land on a spot on the moon where there were some big boulders. He had 30 seconds of fuel left when he took over the manual controls. And they were that close to being stuck on the moon, you know. They still had to have some fuel to get off the moon.
So to punch back up. Last question, John, is I know we're, well, okay, for this show. Where they landed? Out in the ocean. Yeah. Within a 5-mile radius would have been amazing. They got a little bit closer than that. Was that the skill of the guys, or was that nature and God helping out?
Well, you know, they were just, what, 18 seconds over the time that NASA thought they were going to hit the ocean, and they were within 3 miles of the spot after they changed the location the night before. I think that's just amazing how they could do that.
Yeah, and we still have Apollo 13 we could talk about, too. Thanks for coming by, guys. This has been a treat.
All right. This is yours. Thank you.
Oh, thank you very much. See everybody tomorrow.